Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Today at the cafe, I'm excited to be speaking with Jeff Tippett, author of Unleashing Your Superpower, Why Persuasive Communications is the Only Force You Will Ever Need. And he's also the CEO of Targeted Persuasion, an award-winning public affairs and communications firm, working with brands like Airbnb, the National Restaurant Association, the League of Women Voters, to discuss the difference between manipulation and persuasion and how becoming the master at one can impact your business growth. Jeff, welcome.
Angela, thanks for having me today. I'm excited about our conversation.
Yeah, me too. So let's before we get started, why don't we take a few minutes to tell the audience a little bit about you and about your book?
Absolutely. So I founded Targeted Persuasion in October of 2014. Primarily to do political work. And since then, we've migrated the company and we focus on public affairs and communications work. So typically what we do is we work with the lobbyists, the elected official, the media, and the general public to move policy prescriptions forward for our clients or to stop policy prescriptions. And I spend about 50% of my time on that, and about the other half of my time, I speak professionally. So I travel internationally, sharing my messages on stages.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, this is a really exciting topic. It's funny, I was sitting with somebody this morning, and we started talking about your book and about the conversation today on the show. So I hope they are a new subscriber and listening to the show here today. So before we get started and kind of getting into this topic, I do ask two questions of all my guests. And the first one, when it comes to thinking about growing your business, what keeps you up at night?
Well, I'll tell you this, Angela. When I launched my company, everything kept me up at night. It was, being an entrepreneur, launching out, like everything was keeping me up at night. But right now, I think where I am, if I had to like pull in and identify like where my thought process is, it's really around this concept of chasing versus attracting, and all time. Business, especially for entrepreneurs that we're out there, we are chasing so many things. So understanding like what is chasing and what is attracting, and moving more toward a model of attracting instead of chasing.
Oh, you know what? I agree with you 100%. As a longtime entrepreneur, I mean, every day I sit at my desk and think about, you know, where's the next piece going to come from and how do I go attract that? And to me, that's what we want as a model. So my days of as an agency owner, I mean, it was all about how can we get people to call us instead of me having to go out and be a hunter. And so that definitely still keeps me up at night, and I think about that all the time. The other question I have is two-parter. What is the best business advice you've ever received, and or if it's different, that you've given?
Absolutely. So I think the best I've recently received, and it's from my coach, and she shared these three concepts with me that as I really began to internalize and understand what she's talking about has really changed my mindset. And these three things are, first of all, to find my lane, to understand clearly what it is that I do, to clearly state the problem that I solve, but then also to trust the universe, to align things and to bring things into place in the right time for me.
Okay. The defining the lane is interesting. My guest last week, I asked him his business advice, and what he said is, you know, sell what you have and not trying to chase and always think that there's something other that you need to bring in order to be successful. You spend a lot of time being sidetracked, if you will. I call it chasing shiny pennies, thinking I need more in order to be successful, yet we don't take advantages of, you know, where our lane is and really focus on that. And that was his advice, and I think that sounds like yours. And it's a good rule to follow.
And I think for people like me that speak as well, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs do speak for lead generation as well as for revenue. And when we clearly understand manufacturing and what it is that we do, where we are specialists and what we bring to the table, then audience can determine, like, if we are the right fit for that, as I work with meeting planners and speakers bureaus and people like that. So, you know, I have to do that. I have to identify, clearly state what my lane is. Otherwise, others can't determine if we are going to be a good match or not to keep the conversation going.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk this off. Let's kick this off. So let's start, and I think this is a simple question. What is the difference at being a master manipulator versus a master persuader?
Yeah, this was a conversation for me that I really began to understand during a time when I adopted a baby from the country. Hey, during this period, the government was falling apart, and the president was being run out of office, and here I was, this young American guy, in the middle of this process, found myself right in the middle of a civil war. And through things totally crashing and totally falling apart, I really began to understand the difference between persuasion and manipulation. Now, so first of all, the way that they're saying, they're both about moving people. They're both or groups or ideas, right? They're both about moving things, but they are so different. So persuasion means this. It means to call someone to do something, but to do it through reasoning or sound argument. Now, when I use the phrase here, sound argument, I'm not talking about what we do at our dinner tables at, you know, politics and religion duking it out. Rather, what I'm talking about here is two parties really sharing their values, their ideas, what they're looking for, where the gaps are, what they need. And then over a period of time, and especially after sustained effort, right, then we bring the other person to the same place. Where manipulation, again, like persuasion, is about moving, but it means to control or to influence a person. But to do it cleverly, to do it unfairly. And typically what happens in manipulation is we're trying to get some people to do something out of our own self-interest, mm-hmm. out of what works for us. Now, for me, I look for two magical words when I'm negotiating a contract, for example, with a new client, realizing to understand, did I manipulate or did I persuade? And those two magical words are, that's right. So, Angela, here's what I mean by that. When we finish a conversation, it's to that point we're at the decision-making, and that client looks at me and says, Jeff, that's right. Your company can solve this problem. Jeff, you do have a solution that we're looking for. Jeff, that's right. What I know in that moment is that client now wants it just as much, maybe even more so than I want it, and they want it because they see the value, they mm-hmm. see the benefit for themselves. And then at that point, I know I have persuaded.
Okay. All right. I get that. I mean, I think it's hard if you're a professional persuader. We all are, I guess. I'm from the advertising and marketing field. But part of it is, where's that fine line of when we're trying to persuade and get people to come to our side and see our vision, if you will, and agree with it and move to our side versus, you know, kind of strong-arming people to bend to our will. And I think that's kind of that manipulator side of it, is how do I get you to bend to what I want you to do versus getting you to see and come to appreciate and understand what we're trying to achieve and, you know, coming willingly to my side.
Exactly. And most times, I would say, not just often, I would say most times that happens when the other person comes to the recognition of their own self-interest and why it matters to them, why it solves their problem, why it fixes their need, and they understand it for themselves, and they want it for themselves. And then, to me, that is that fine line. Like, when this is about me understanding, like, the value that I bring to the table, where your gaps are, and how we pull these together, and this solves a problem for you, and you want it, no longer am I manipulating. I am persuading. We've all been manipulated, like, through car sales or through gym memberships or, you know, workouts, like, all of those type of things. We know what that feels like.
Yeah, car buying. My hair is on my neck just stood up when you start when you mentioned that, and that's a really interesting. I mean, if you think about salesmen at a car dealership, I mean, their goal is to whatever. It's not even about getting you to convince yourself. I mean, they're trying all sorts of tricks and to get you convinced versus coming to the conclusion. And I apologize to any car salespeople out there that are listening, but. But that's always an interesting one. And really, if I think about that, so from business to salespeople to political leaders, I mean, it's all about that combination of whether they're really persuading versus trying to motivate or manipulate someone into changing their behavior.
Absolutely. And you know, my firm, in addition to public affairs work, we work with a lot of political campaigns, and we really know that voters turn out, they vote in their own self-interest. So if a candidate represents the values that are important to you and what you're looking for and how you future or how you want to see life change, how you want to see things improve, they vote out of their own self-interest.
Okay. You have a line that I picked up somewhere when I was reading about you is, we live and die based on our ability to persuade. And I believe in that. So let's delve into that idea, if you will, that concept a little bit, and kind of expound upon that for the listeners.
Sure, absolutely. And I know it's a pretty bold statement. I make it in the book, and I make it from stage as well. And I truly believe this. So to me, it doesn't matter if you're the CEO of a company trying to move the company forward, making things happen there, if you're in sales, if you're in middle management, if you are a consultant, if you're an entrepreneur, if you answer the phone for the company, or, hey, if you just don't want to live alone for the rest of your life, then we all live or die based upon our ability to persuade other people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, in your book and reading, is about being effective at persuasion is really being efficient, if you will, at listening. It's simply not being quiet and waiting for, you know, someone, your turn to talk, so to speak. And in many cases, I'm sure we've all been at parties where you're having a conversation and you're, you know, talking about an idea or a concept or what it happens to be. And instead of having a discussion about it, the other person responds with their story. And so it's really, nobody's listening. You're just kind of wanting to participate in the conversation, but we're not, in my opinion, we're not really having a conversation. And I think that the ability to listen, and this is also great for salespeople and really all the people we've been talking about, is really listening and understanding the needs and wants and the desires of the person that we're communicating with and building that emotional connection. And I talk about that a lot of time in marketing, because if I have an emotional connection with someone, it's very difficult to break that bond. So a competitor trying to come in and being rational, offering price points, a little more difficult to break that emotional connection that I have. And really that comes with listening and understanding and what the, you know, what my clients, if you will, really are looking for. So this really gets into listening skills. So is this addressed deeply in your book, and is this something you work with your clients on, is not about being good persuaders, but really about being good listeners?
Absolutely. To me, this is the beginning. This is the foundation of persuasion. And especially with people in sales, if they can understand this mindset shift of moving away from talking about your product, your goods, your services, the sales features, the benefits, move away from all that. In fact, on a recent webinar that I did, I encouraged a group of salespeople, like, to start your meeting, instead of walking into the conference room, at that point, by the time you're sitting down face-to-face or having that phone call, you kind of test check to some degree, instead of walking in and having the first conversations about how old your company is, how many awards you've won, how many states your company does business in, turn it toward them and start talking with them about what's going on, where are the gaps, where are the needs, and it does change the conversation immediately. It starts with that mindset shift of realizing this is about them. It's about my audience. It's always about my audience, and it's only about my audience. Now, I'm going to bring in solutions to the problems, but when our mindset shifts away from us and what we're selling and what we're doing to really caring about them. Now, and I want to be very careful, too, in this, that, you know, we're not talking about manipulating by pretending to care. I'm talking about really caring, like understanding what they're going through, what's happening, and building that type of connection by shifting our mindset. So I talk a lot about listening. And then I have a whole chapter on making a connection and five ways to make connections, just kind of like what you were just talking about, because that emotional bond, that emotional connection, is that secret sauce to not only attract them, but to retain them as well.
Okay. You mentioned five ways to make connections. So what are those five?
Yeah, here are the five that we talk about in the book. The first one is humor. I think this is one that's overlooked quite often, is just getting a person to laugh with you, especially if you're in sales. That's going to be a natural barrier there already. So, you know, what can we say? How can we just laugh together and let walls fall down? I will tell you, as a professional speaker, it's so important to me to make sure that I can make that connection with the audience, that I took a stand-up comedy class. I also just hired a comedian out of LA that helps me with my content to create those funny moments as well. It's that important to me as a speaker to connect with my audience by getting us to laugh together. So humor is the first one. The second one is compassion, and we can't have compassion without listening. So having listened, understand what the other person is going through, fully embracing what it is, or taking it, the third one here, one step deeper, empathy. And drawing on our own experiences, maybe when we've been something similar or the exact same thing, and feeling what they are feeling and having that connection with them. One here is storytelling, which is why when I'm on stage, I open up with the story of adopting this baby from the country of Haiti. It's a very emotional story that you'll see people in tears. It really connects me with my audience. They bond with me over that story, and it opens them up for me to talk about everything else I talk about in my presentation. And then the last one here is authenticity, like really making sure that we are who we are and who we say we are, and allowing people into our lives and trusting them with our lives.
Those are great. Five great tips, and I wrote them down. And there's some of these I want to do. The stand-up comedian thing is pretty interesting. I've often thought about that, and for fear, of course, of not having funny content, has always held me back. I love public speaking, and I do tell jokes, and I do try to connect, like you just said, with humor. But I thought, man, maybe I'll take it one step further and actually go talk to the stand-up folks and maybe take it to another level. But maybe I might try that now that I'm talking to you.
For me, it's extremely beneficial, especially as I can work through content. That's why I'm at this next stage, hired just this one comedian who's very successful in reaching out to her. It's like, let's work on some of these lines. Let's work on, and especially giving my speeches a rhythm, an up and down and a flow. And I use video, I use humor, we do some movement, all these different things, stuff from our phones, all these different things to interact. But still, to me, if I can get them laughing, and I typically will try to do something within the first 30 seconds of stepping on that stage to get them to laugh, and I make it relevant to what's going on. So, for example, I was just speaking for a group. They happened to be meeting in this casino area, and there was a pole, like a stripper pole, up by the stage. So when I first came up, I talked about the pole. I was like, I didn't know this was this type of event, but hey, if you guys are into it, I'm good with it. What's next? And the whole place was rolling, but it was within context too. Like, they could relate to it. They knew it was spur of the moment. I saw it. I was in the space. I got them all laughing within the first 30 seconds, and we were buddies.
Okay, I like that. So this is probably going to be more about your company. Give the listeners a positive story where you worked with somebody and about helping them become better at persuading, if you will, and a success story. And then I'm going to ask you about one that maybe, and it might be yours, or one you've heard that didn't turn out so well and the reasons why.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my favorite positive stories is we got hired by the National Restaurant Association in D.C. to run a campaign in the state of North Carolina. A little background, blue laws prohibited Sunday alcohol sales within the state, whether it be restaurants or retail, before noon. The thinking was that you were to be in church worshiping Jesus. You were not to be buying alcohol. So sales were not allowed before 10 a.m. And the state association had a bill introduced that they thought was just going to start a conversation, but it gained immediate traction there. And in this bill, the campaign, we named it hashtag FreeTheMimosa. And this whole campaign was about setting people free to go and drink. So, like, we chose this name because, just like your reaction, people laughed. And that's part of what I talk about in my book when I talk about messaging. I talk about crafting sticky messages that will stay with people. So we did. We created it, and we made this whole campaign about users. Now, this is I did not have time to do polling, to test messaging, or any of the things that I prefer to do before launching such a monumental campaign. So we had to rely on a lot of gut on this campaign. And here's what I knew as an individual consumer within the state, that I had been to restaurants at 11 o'clock a.m. to try to have a mimosa, only to be told no. And I knew what it's like to go to try to get beer for a Sunday afternoon game on Sunday morning to be told no. And I knew what that felt like. So I try to connect with that feeling that was inside of people and give them the opportunity themselves to free the mimosa. And we launched the campaign. The first action alert that went out We received the most responses that any campaign in any state that a restaurant had ever done to that point. Again, we made it about the users, about giving them the opportunity. Here's the format to get what it is you want. And we pushed back against that pain, acknowledged that pain, drew out of that, and got them to take the action steps that we wanted them to take.
Okay. You know, part of this, before we kind of give me one that didn't work out so well, I mean, is in communications and marketing. I mean, a lot of this is really just the principles of solid communications and really understanding, you mentioned pain points. I mean, I talk about this all the time with clients and prospects and people that I speak with or presentations that I'm giving is you've got to understand, you've got to know your customer. You got to understand what their motivations, behaviors, and what's driving them. Why are they making these decisions? There's a process called laddering, and I really take kind of the functional benefits, if you will, of the product, and really layer it up to the emotional side of that. So for rational to emotional, and understand what are the ultimate motivations for decisions that are being made, because it really is about that person, not necessarily about you and what you're doing. Is about really them and making sure that you're solving their pain points and their needs.
That's exactly right. It's about them, and it's always about them. And we know that people make decisions for emotional reasons, and then they justify through logical reasons. And oftentimes, the emotion even overshadows that logical, and so they make illogical decisions. And we've probably all done that in some of our purchasing that we may have done that was a rash purchasing. But understanding that people make these decisions out of emotion, which is why I wanted to draw on the pain that they felt. And we don't like being told no. Like drawing on that pain that they were feeling and using that to motivate them to take the steps that I wanted them to take, but this was still in their own self-interest. I was delivering for them the results. And as a, you know, we did make it. We made it all the way through the House, the Senate, reconciliation. We made it to the governor's desk. It was signed. And in North Carolina, now that's law.
All right. Well, this can have a drink on Sunday. Is there a quick story on, again, maybe it was you or maybe it was somebody else who, working with someone to try to really get them to be more of a persuader, but they just continued to be a manipulator, and what they were trying to do just didn't work because they didn't understand their audience?
Yeah, and I definitely won't name the client in this, but I'll say that we were working with a university, and with one of the schools within the university, we were working to rebrand that university and create new messaging for them. And we went through some testing, developed the basic messaging, got all that in place, and then we ran that. They had four segments. We ran that through all the segments. We tested all of the messaging, and we got some very interesting results back from the people. And what we ended up developing for them was very much user-centric information, but they were so anti what everyone else was saying, what they wanted, they decided to basically ignore all of that and to continue to move forward in their own agenda and how they wanted themselves to be positioned. And it did not succeed. Things did not move well with donors, with alumni, with any of the marketing collateral.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, sometimes that does happen. Sometimes we plan our best, but it just doesn't resonate. I'm starting, believe it or not, we're actually about 21 minutes into this, so we're going to be coming to a close here pretty soon, I always struggle with how quickly it all goes by. So let's do this. Let's take the last question, if you will, and give me some recommendations, suggestions for the listeners. And we talked about five ways to connect, but give me some tips and tricks, if you will, that the listeners can take and really sink in, especially for entrepreneurs who are always convinced they have the best product, the best service, and if people aren't, spending money to really want to invest, then obviously everybody that's listening to them is an idiot. and so they don't really listen and understand their customers. So let's talk about those tips and tricks that my listeners can walk away with today to get them thinking about being a better persuader.
Yeah, in fact, I just did the framework today for a new blog post in this space, and it relates to email marketing. And in some of the things that we discussed there, I think it could be a value here because it applies even much larger than email. You know, oftentimes when we're sending these messages and we're sending bulk email communications, we write to a list. Like we look at our clients, we have our list name, what we call the list, and we write our messages around that list. And one of the things that I talk about in this new blog post that's getting ready to come out is reframing that. And instead of writing to that list, whatever we happen to name that list, to come back through and to take a look at an individual, a single person. Let's just say Sally, for example. Let's talk about Sally, and then bring to your mind everything you know about that one person that's on the list that you happen to know. Bring to the mind everything about her, what she likes, all of your communication with her, and then write your email just straight to Sally, as if you're only talking to one person. And then after you finish that email, let's figure out, like, what do you need to massage from that? Here's what we found. Most people recognize when we're sending bulk email, and they realize that you're just writing to this whole group of people. You're not writing specifically to them. And our mindset is that way because we're thinking of this as a list of people. So one of the tools that we're talking about in this post for helping people to understand how do you persuade through email is to move away from list conversation and have an individual conversation.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Jeff, that brings us to a conclusion. So why don't you tell the listeners how they can contact you and buy your book and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Easiest way is through my website, jefftippett.com, J-E-F-F-T-I-P-P-E-T-T. And I've got Google Ads and all kind of misspellings of my name. So if they get anywhere close, I'm quite sure that they're going to find me there. And my social handles are there as well as information from my book. So it's all there. Check it out. And I look forward to having conversations with people.
All right. And I really appreciate your time today. I know the listeners are really going to benefit from this conversation. So thank you for joining me at the cafe today. You can find out more about me and read my blogs or view my show videos at the Ponzi Group. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn as well. And if your business is in need of a CMO, but you're not ready for a full-time person yet, connect with me. I'd welcome the opportunity to explore the benefits of using a fractional CMO. And, of course, you can subscribe to the show at the Business Growth Cafe, or we are also on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and so many other platforms around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.